to begin when it feels so nice to come back into the space of being silent together. We've all put out a lot of energy the last few days and had a very active day yesterday. Makes it that much more special to come back to our center and to come back into this space together where we can be focused just on turning within and of offering everything that's happened, all the good things, any of the challenging things. We just offer this all back up to God, and we feel the joy of that process, of that unfolding. We let go of anything that we're holding on to. It's a truly wonderful thing that we can share in this practice. It's like every week we do our orbit and we spin around the center, and then on Sunday we get to come right back to center. Begin by praying together, O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Friend Beloved God,
Friend Beloved God,
Great Masters,
Great Masters,
Jesus Christ,
Jesus Christ,
Babaji Krishna,
Babaji Krishna,
Lahiri Mahashai,
Lahiri Mahashai,
Sri Teshwar,
Sri Teshwar,
Paramahansa Yogananda,
Paramahansa Yogananda,
Blessed Mother,
Blessed
Mother, dear David,
beloved
Saint Francis,
Francis,
lovingly we invoke your presence, into this space,
into
my heart,
into my mind,
O beloved Lord,
O Lord,
free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Om.
Om.
Peace.
Peace.
Amen.
Amen.
I'd like to read this message from Mother this morning. When you have learned to balance all of the forces which you have gone through, and you are able to come down and function again in this world, then indeed you are, as Jesus said, in the world, but not of it. To all seeming appearances, you are. You move like anyone else. But in truth, you have become the glorious one, the Christed one, the radiant Son of God. To all who received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, not just to one, but to all, Jesus said. So that means that there is hope for every man, not just one man that we look up to lift us up. This quiet talk with the Master is called The Flood of Golden Silence. Listen quietly to me, my child, as you enter the golden throne room of your innermost being, as you kneel on the throne of your own consciousness. It is not always necessary that words pass between us. Often, I would treat you in a flood of golden silence, as that sacred spot takes on the glory of my presence. It takes on a peace and purity of which the human mind cannot conceive. I would wrap you in these vibrations. With my hand on your bowed head, I would have you absorb this high glory. I can give you in the deep silence a golden glow, which you shall wear as an armor all day, and which nothing but love will penetrate. yet you often feel a weight upon you. You know not why nor whence it comes, that I can wash away by this pure radiance. So you see that I can wash away by this pure radiance. So you see that these trysts which you keep faithfully are threefold. There is the Father, who, like the loving earthly Father, gives you gifts of health, plenty, and fullness. Greatest among these is the gifts of the Son, who takes from your heart all burdens, bearing them in his holy hands to the golden flame of the altar fires, setting you free from all limitation. This same Father God gives to you the Holy Spirit, which in the depth of that great silence floods every atom of your being with a holy fire of divine vibration. Then you are as a golden string on the harp of your Lord. From this threefold tryst, you go forth into the world of men, a bearer of gifts from the Father, free from your burdens through the grace of the Son, and bathed in a fire of righteousness by the Holy Spirit. Thus does the Holy Trinity take its place in your life and in the lives of others. Peony, as you're ready, would you please lead us in some chanting? to pick up with our reading from the Bible. Today is Palm Sunday, but I'm not going to read Palm Sunday yet because this week in the Thursday meditation we read from chapter 9 in St. John, and this was the story of Jesus' healing of the blind man. So he's in the holy city, and the Pharisees are really taking notice of him. And it's very interesting to observe all the different interactions that are happening. I was so touched by how this chapter ended that I'd like to begin with it again and read it again. We'll start halfway through St. John chapter 9, verse 17. They say unto the blind man again, "What sayest thou of him, that he hath opened thine eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." But the Jews did not believe concerning him, that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then doth he now see?" His parents answered them and said, "We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age. Ask him. He shall speak for himself." These words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess he was the Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore said his parents, "He is of age, ask him." Any man that says he's the Christ will be kicked out of church. Then again called they the man that was blind, and said unto him, "Give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered and said, "Whether he be a sinner or not, I know not. What I know, whereas I was blind, now I see." Then said they to him again, What did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you did not hear. Wherefore would you hear it again? Will you also be his disciples?" Then they reviled him and said, "Thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is." The man answered and said unto them, "Why herein is a marvelous thing, that you know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened mine eyes. Now we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshipper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? If this man were not of God, he could do nothing." They answered and said unto him, "Thou wast altogether born in sin, and dost thou teach us?" And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he found him, he said unto him, "Dost thou believe on the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him?" And Jesus said unto him, "Thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind." And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words, and said unto him, Are we blind also? And Jesus said unto them, If you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say, We see, and therefore your sin remaineth. The beginning of chapter 10 starts with Christ speaking still. Verily, verily, I say unto you, He that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. He that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of the stranger. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. And Jesus said unto them again, Verily I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is a hireling, and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And the other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold, and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. This commandment have I received of my Father. So many tremendous things that are expressed in this reading, I don't know where to start. But the clear thought and image that comes to me is this idea of the wolf attacking the sheep. And I cannot, of myself, not acknowledge that we've had this happen here recently, haven't we? On the outside, we had the two husky dogs attack our alpacas. And that evening, there was one sister who was able to hear, and she heard the sounds of something off on what was in truth a dark night with lots of blustery wind blowing in. And you could say even some forces blowing in that weren't of the spirit. They weren't trying to come in of the door. They were trying to come in the back way. And those forces were blowing around that night. And they blew in the form of these two huskies. And our sister Rebecca heard the sound of something amiss, and she had the awareness of one who was born of the fold and not a hireling. And she went and checked on it. Now this is a simple thing, but it's a very important thing. Because when we are here and we are of the Spirit, this is exactly how we respond. But when we are here and we are holding ourselves separate from that Spirit, we could hear the sound and we could ignore it. We could not be aware of what's going on. And we could not respond in the way that is needful, that we're being called by God to do. Now, one particularly poetic and wonderful thing happened in the aftermath of this, which was the Vows of Simplicity last weekend. And I have alluded already that God's timing for each sister who took the vow was truly perfect, and how each one has had to go through their own process to arrive at that vow in spirit and in truth. And I think so beautifully represented was Rebecca's willingness to go out and make that choice that night. To be a sister, she heard something and she did what a sister would do. And I can't help but notice the divine timing of that ordination. And how as we take our little steps in our life and we do these things, how the truth then can be made manifest on the outside. But short of those little choices and those little decisions, we do not have that made true. The fruit is not born on the outside, even as we wish it would be. For all of us, this is a very important thing to understand, and it comes down to how we live our life and whether we are living our life from the inside out or whether we are living our life from the outside in. I would like that to be our topic today as we approach this Easter season, because this is in truth the difference of living in the Christ consciousness versus living as a person and an ego in this world, just like everyone else from the outside in. Now, it's very important that we be willing to think about these things and consider this, because it makes all the difference in our spiritual life as we embark on what it is to live our life from the inside out. In this reading, we see that so many people were responding to the Christ, to Jesus, from their own place of consciousness. For the blind man, he had been healed. And so even in the face of the Pharisees who questioned him and were in truth ready to throw and cast him out for saying the truth, he was willing to do it because the experience that had been wrought inside of him was born from the inside. He had been born blind. He had been made whole. How could he deny what had happened? He couldn't. Even as all the pressures of the world and this worldly institution of church and idea of God pressed upon him, he held firm in his truth that he had lived. This is not an easy thing to do. Pharisees, of course, skeptical and looking for the answer that they sought, which was to condemn Jesus and disprove that this had happened, called the boy's parents. Now, the parents had known he was born blind. They had known him his whole life that he had been blind, and now he could see. Then that very interesting passage is inserted in this reading, which says, because they were aware that the Pharisees wanted to kill Jesus, they would not speak on his behalf. And so what did they do? They said, well, ask our son, he's of age. He'll tell you what happened. And in that way, we see that the parents would not enter the sheepfold. They had been a witness to the truth of what the Christ was and what Christ had done. Yet they would not claim that for themselves. They weren't ready for what that meant in terms of how is the world going to relate to me? What's the pearl of great price I'm going to have to pay? I don't want to deal with that. Talk to him. So the Pharisees spoke to him again, and he said, if I tell you again what he's done, will you be his disciples? Can you imagine saying such a thing? What faith had been wrought in him from a lifetime of being blind to having his eyes opened by the Christ? What a tremendous faith he had earned from that price he paid. Of course, the Pharisees condemned him and said, you've been blind since birth because you're a sinner. Just as someone who lives their life on the outside would judge another, would condemn another. And so they naturally kick him out of church. They cast him out of the church too and say, you can't be here either. So within one page, we've seen Jesus, the Christ himself, kicked out of the church. We've seen the man that the Spirit has healed kicked out of the church. And this chapter ends in a tremendous way, which is Jesus hears what's happened and that this man has been kicked out for his faith. And so he finds him and he tests him. And he says, do you believe in the Son of God? So even after all of this, Jesus still tested his faith and asked him directly, do you believe? And he says, what is it that I am to believe in? And Jesus says, he speaketh to you right now. Now, can each of you imagine what is it in yourself to have the consciousness of receptivity, of openness, of humility and courage to believe that God speaketh to you right now? Can you imagine? Can you do it? This is the level of faith that is exemplified in this teaching that is required for each of us. And Jesus transitions seamlessly in his parable, and he begins to speak of this sheepfold. And he says that the shepherd has come in through the front door, and that is what qualifies him to be the shepherd of his sheep, because he has come in straight and narrow to God and done it in truth and in spirit. And yet there are those who would want to be in that role who haven't done that. And we see that energy, that kind of consciousness sleeking around the edges, trying to take and claim things for itself. This outside-in consciousness, which is trying to operate as if it's a person in this world and that its happiness comes by its own status and stature, by its own comfort or wealth, by its own ability to get what it wants out of life. And it defines its own spiritual path in this way. It says, when things are going great, I am great. God has blessed me. I am wonderful. And of course, we know that this sets itself up for a tremendous fall, because everything in this world is going to be a mixed bag. The God that we are looking for isn't in some perfect experience on the outside, though of course that happens. It is in the perfect experience of faith, of knowing God on the inside of ourself, this golden throne room. This is why we are all tested. This is why we have to advance from first grade to second grade to third grade, and we have to keep growing and growing and growing, because this kind of faith requires us to be so clear in ourselves, so simple, that nothing that is born of this world can shake us, that no confusion that is projected onto us from from these kind of demonic forces, which are just born of doubt. They are born of fear or greed. These kind of forces cannot shake us up anymore, and we can stand square in our center and look at them and say, no place for you anymore. I have the Christ in me. I have the Christ in my own life. And we send these forces away. This is something we all have to become adept at doing. But in truth, we don't do it. As Jesus says over and over again, it's not I who do the work. You're so threatened by me. But it's my Father who does it in me. And I am here to bear witness to what my Father does in me for this world, for everyone, for you. And you would crucify me for it. This is the way of the cross that must be lived for time immemorial. It has been and it will always be this way of egos that are being born into the Christ consciousness and are perfecting their realization in God. For every one of us, this is true. And it's for us to hold on to this knowing all the time. And we do this by living our life from the inside out. And so each morning we surrender this life back to God. We have our communion and we make our offering. And every evening we better do the same thing, because we better be sure that nothing that happens of this day carries forward into our subconscious that night and takes us over again in these kind of emotions and upsets or excitements to start our day anew. Is that what we want to bring into our next day? We realize it is not. That we've done our best today, and that maybe we have a lesson to learn in today. Maybe we can simply rejoice in God in the perfection of this day. Whatever it is we need to do, we make that offering to God, and we end our day that way. And in this way, we always stay centered in ourself, in the self of the Christ that is in me. The movie, of course, Inside Out, is something that we've all watched and all found some amazing way of being able to relate to this idea impersonally. We have the character Anxiety get introduced in the Inside Out 2, and of course, each one of us at some point has had to realize this anxiety living inside of us. And so there's something really tremendous about being able to witness the inner workings of an adolescent and these kind of emotions of sadness and nostalgia, all these things that live in us. But we get to witness this in someone else. And it impersonalizes us, and we don't have to defend my need to be anxious. I don't have to defend my reason to be sad. We can just be a witness to this. And in truth, this is how we have to learn to relate to our own self and our journey with our emotions in our process of unfoldment, is that these qualities which start to awaken us, we can say, okay, I feel a little bit upset today. I feel angry. What's the solution? And the solution, of course, is that we invite calmness into the picture. That we give happiness the steering wheel. That we don't continue to let anger be in charge. Or we realize that there's some temptation that's been catching our attention and taking us away from God. And we say, okay, God, I've been thinking about this other person or this other thing that I started wanting without even realizing it. God, I'm going to give this to you. In each of these things, we have got to learn to embrace everything that's coming up inside of ourselves as our opportunity to give it to God. And this is how we live from the inside, is that everything we do, and hopefully we start to get to a point where everything we think and say out loud, we've tuned into it first. We've operated from a place of being centered in ourself, so that we actually are being helpful to the situation. So that we are actually being a part of the whole and of God's intelligence moving through. That we aren't that oppositional force which is coming in to try to thwart the goodness and thwart the positive action. This happens all too naturally when we relate from the outside in and we think, I need to be in control. I need to have a voice. The kind of tension that builds up in us so fast when we want things for ourselves. We are all certainly experiencing that in the few brothers that are working with the Grange folks, and how when we try to introduce a positive idea, that this oppositional force springs up in them of needing to try to control that idea and make it their own. Now, it's not for us to judge that or be upset by that. It's for us to be simple and say, well, can you share how you're feeling? Can you tell me what you're thinking? And let them get it out. And then, okay, I'd like to share how this feels for me. Maybe we don't need to go down that road. Maybe this is very simple. Maybe the market's already successful and doesn't need to be fixed. The simpler we are in ourselves, the simpler we can navigate these things for the benefit of the whole and for everyone, because we're not getting swept up into somebody else's tornado. Gradually, as we practice this ideal of living from the inside of ourselves, it's like we are traveling in this orbit throughout the week, but our center on Sunday is never lost. Our center in God and Guru is always there. And so when these unexpected things arise, which are guaranteed to happen, when an inevitable difficulty happens, we are okay. Because we're in our center and we say, okay, God, what's the positive step that you'd have me take? You know, I think about this journey that we've been on with hope. And it's still in the air in some ways. Hope is still very much recovering. And yet at each juncture, our choice is to just take the next positive step and hold on to our hope. Our hope is just our positive expectation. Now, we need to be careful about our understanding of positive expectations. That doesn't mean we are suddenly attached to every outcome. It doesn't mean we take on the stress of trying to make something a certain way. It also doesn't mean that you think about somebody saying, well, I really, really, really hope this will happen. It doesn't mean that we're desperate either. Having hope means that we are hopeful, that we are full of positive expectation for life in God. And that when we learn to live this way, that we navigate everything in ever new ways by being willing to be hopeful and do our part. Now, we have to do our part. It's not as simple as just a kind of faith that we just get to lay down and do nothing. We have to have faith that God is going to show us what to do, and we have to be willing to do it. And so in even this process with hope, there's a beautiful poetry in taking the steps every day and every week to stay present and do what we can to keep her going and to keep the positive hope alive. And also be real about the nature of the situation. It's okay that we see that this started out very grim, that this is a very serious thing, and that there's a chance in the material realm she may not make it. But we can have positive expectation for God's will and our own openness to take every step. This is an amazing thing, amazing kind of training for how to live our life. And it continues in a kind of positive attitude towards all of our life, for tomorrow and what tomorrow brings, for what kind of adventures Ram will send us on that we can't even imagine, and we shouldn't try to, because we are living from the inside out. We are open to whatever that entails. We will both take the responsibility to do all the things that are needful, and we're open to taking a detour. We might just need to not turn at the normal turnoff and just drive the scenic route, because Leo's in the car and it's fun. And that's what we're prompted to do. And I noticed that because of the last time I had been driving with Leo, he started to define the way my car drives, that it can't turn because I refuse to turn at all the expected places. He said, well, your car can't turn. And I said, that's not true. Ram drives my car. He decides whether I go straight or I turn, and it's up to him. And Leo said, Ram? Ram, who? And I said, do you know about Ram? And he said, is Ram God? And I said, yes. Ram is driving the car. So then yesterday he was asking if he could ride in the car with me. And I think part of him wanted God to drive him home. And so we took a little detour down Bretland. I don't recommend it. There's many no trespassing signs. I told Leo what all the signs said as we would drive past them. And Leo would say, oh no, someone's going to call the police on us. And I said, don't forget, Leo, Ram is driving the car. As long as God's with us, we're okay. And he said, okay, and he relaxed. And I said, let's admire these beautiful houses on the water. It is beautiful. If you're ever prompted by Ram to drive down to the end of Bretland past all these gates and no entry signs, it is a truly amazing neighborhood less than a mile from us, all on the water down there. So we got to just admire some of these homesteads and got to pick out our favorite ones. And Leo will always tell me which one's my house. So, no, Leo, that's not my house. But the point for all of us is that Ram is actually driving this car. And sometimes we can't turn. We have to keep going straight. And other times it's very important that we turn. But it's not important that we try to figure out when to do what, because that is living life from the outside in. And the more that we don't know the truth of God in our life, the more we try to figure it all out from the outside. I would speculate that this is why Mother Hamilton spoke so strongly about not having an organization. Because as we go down the road of not being guided by the Spirit and of not knowing that God is in charge of our own life, then what do? We try to organize everything from the outside. We start marketing ourselves left and right. We start trying to come up with all these things to convince people of our own spirituality. We start wanting to teach classes about things we haven't in truth learned. We need to be very serious about living life from the inside out. And be serious isn't the right word. Sincere is the right word. We need to be very sincere about it, so that the steps that we are taking have integrity and harmony with God. Because when they don't, the tension builds. And next thing you know, we're making drastic decisions based on what started out as one bad step in the wrong direction. It was as simple as taking one step backwards to correct it, but we didn't. We were adamant that we were doing what was the right thing. We keep going and the mess gets bigger. And it reminds me of sitting at the casino table. And this is a true story. I once had a guy that I worked with who was convinced he had come up with a magic formula for beating the casino. And he was going to go do these bets. And if he lost a bet, he would double down on the next bet. And he had done the math. He figured it out. This is a true story. I had the joy of going to the casino with him that night. And that joy turned into horrible misery as he was convinced that he had figured it out and he was committed to going down that road every step after step after step. I would guess at this point, I can't remember how much money he lost, but it was probably at least $10,000. And by the end of it, he had basically lost all of his money, and he was completely decimated by it. Now, all he had to do was lose that first bet to realize I could stop now, but he didn't want to. He wanted to follow that track all the way through, and I think about him sometimes, and I sure hope he learned that lesson. Now, the mistake he made, of course, was as simple as realizing I have come up with a faulty formula from the outside, and this is not the way to beat life or to win at the casino. And the best formula for me now is get up from this table and leave. And he would not do it. Now, this can happen to all of us as we cling to the attachments and the things from the outside that we think are ours and that we deserve and we want. We think we figured out life. And that's a trap. We got to be very careful. I think this is the reason the path is described as being on the straight and narrow. Because in truth, we have to be willing to hold up everything that we're going to do and every action we're going to take. We're going to test every spirit, and we hold it up to the light. Now, at first, this can seem very daunting if we're thinking of ourselves as a person. But I tell you that the less you think of yourself as a person, and the more that you realize yourself as a kind of infinite consciousness, that God is inside of you, it actually just becomes freedom. It's not yours to figure out. It's not yours to bicker or quarrel. It's not yours to be upset. It's for you to hold it up to the light. Say, is there any truth in this? What do you say, God? What comes next? In the end, we find that herein lies the greatest adventure, is that we become free to truly live this life, not in our emotions, not in the pursuit of things for ourselves, but in total surrender to whatever God wants to happen. I had the great joy of having coffee with Carla a couple days ago on the porch, and I was able to share with her some of my reflections as I've been reading David's book, Silence. And part of my reflections were actually just about Carla and the process that she went through when David was in silence, and David's realization and his process for realizing that him and Carla were to be together. And this was no small thing. And when I asked Carla about it, I don't think she'll mind me saying what she shared with me was that her whole life had been difficult. That at no point did she find the answers or the happiness or the satisfaction of life in this world that she was looking for. And as she said that, I thought that's exactly the experience that was right and true to bring her to David, so that she could see the Christ and recognize him. And at that point, David going into silence, Carla had already become his secretary and was already helping him with countless things. And in all of this, it was in a state of total surrender, not in a state of, I'm doing this so I can get what I want out of this relationship, but in whatever is needed, whatever is needful, I am here. And we can all feel this in who she is, that's how she would have arrived and related to David. Now, I can only imagine, I asked her, what was it like when David contacted you and said, hey, by the way, I think we should be together. This is the guru saying this. And I think she said to me that she didn't even know what to say or think when he said it. It kind of just froze her up. But this is all because of surrender. And the reason I'm sharing all of this is this was all made possible. Because when we enter into a state of surrendering ourselves, God can give us things that are so much greater and better than we could have even ever imagined when we were chasing after these little things for ourselves. But we have to really do it. We have to really surrender. And so, of course, we know how the story ended. David comes out of seclusion, and now we all just know Carla as having been David's wife and been David's disciple and having surrendered herself into that, whatever that meant. In a lot of ways, you could say it's like the blind man who came to the master, and the master opened their eyes so they could see. And the blind man said, "I am ready to follow you." Often what I haven't shared is how much that story reminds me and is the same story as Peony has lived. And I think it's a wonderful thing as the brothers and sisters that everybody can actually be aware of that. And what is it that she's lived? That exact state of surrender. And it's what I've lived too. I don't need to make this about myself, but the truth is that in the aftermath of my own crumbling marriage and trying to hold out the highest and so many things falling apart, the death of David, the death of my first guru, Roy, everything in my life and my world falling apart and crumbling, God taught me how to surrender. And the truth is now, on the outside, for anybody who lives their life on the outside, they think, oh, Zach now married Peony. Like, they must have been thinking about that. They must have planned that. Some kind of projection from the outside. Because that's how we live in this world, from the outside. But what I would share with all of you is that I was in the depth of sadhana, and that I was uplifted into a state of bliss, and Mother Hamilton visited me in the dark night of my soul. And do you know what she told me? She showed me Peony's face, and she said, "This is my gift to you." Now, what on earth? For me to even say this is a very vulnerable thing. These are the most sacred pearls of a life lived in God. But you are my children. You are my brothers and sisters. If I can't share it with you, who can I share it with? And it was from that place of inner knowing that I began to embark communications with Peony, who was in Hong Kong, had been excommunicated from the farm, from Ananda, from every one of us. I began communications, and then little by little, step by step, I was guided to visiting her after my Italy pilgrimage. Step by step, this led to a second visit, and it led to a 9-inch tumor being removed from inside of Peony. And I went to visit her at that time because I knew that people are more important than things, and that Peony was mine to oversee and to take care of, because God had shown me that. And if I wasn't here for her now, what kind of friend was I? So despite what everyone thought of me, all the judgments of the Pharisees, all the negativity that was heaped on me, I went anyways, because I knew it was true. Not because I was brave, not because I wanted to do this, but because I am surrendered to God's will for this life. Can you understand that? Well, months pass and we plan on Peony's visit. Now, this too was controversial. Who amongst you was ready for that visit? Who amongst you could understand why I was doing this? It took faith to see it. But if you related from the outside in, you wanted nothing to do with it, and I watched it. But you know what? I didn't judge you, and I didn't worry about it, because God had shown me the truth. So all I needed to do was take my steps. Can you understand? One step at a time. That's it. I wasn't trying to convert anyone. I wasn't trying to make anyone understand. I didn't tell anyone what had been shown to me. step at a time. That's how we live our life in God. One step at a time. And Peony came that June. Simon and Sienda came that summer. We're approaching the end of the summer. It's becoming more and more apparent to me it's not right for Peony to go back to Hong Kong. When will she be able to visit again? At this point, it's clear to both of us, we know that it's ordained for us to be together. But does anybody else know, and what will they say? How will they judge us? It didn't matter. I didn't care because I knew God's plan. So I even remember sitting down with Sienda and telling her, Peony's supposed to stay, and I think we're supposed to get married now. Can you imagine? This is very alarming. I'm a conservative person. I don't act rash. This was alarming for my human nature too, I tell you. And then I sat down with Simon, and Simon said, no. No, you don't even know marriage. Your marriage already failed. And I said, oh, I felt that. In my heart, I felt that. But you know, that was fine. And I said to him, Simon, why don't you watch what happens? And if what happens is good, you judge it based on what happens, not what on you think right now. I'm not asking you to agree. I'm not even asking you to trust me. I'm asking you to watch what happens. It's my sincere prayer for Simon that he still watch what happens and learn from it and let go of trying to know and be an expert from the outside and be open to God's guidance from inside. Let the fruits be the evidence of God's righteousness. Don't figure it out on the outside. That's a trap. Now, in the end, this whole chapter has all been written. Who can imagine the ashram without Peony now? How would we have survived separation from Ananda without the clarity that she held out for everyone to be true to the Christ in her life? How would we have survived it? We wouldn't. I tell you that. She was the anchor for all of you to trust me, even though each one of you knew me. And each one of you had been with me. Who wants to stand up to the Pharisees when the Pharisee says it's your head on the platter? Not any ego that I know. But when you have surrendered your life to God, you know the truth, and you don't care anymore. Nothing that this Pharisee consciousness says to you matters a lick. And they can come with all their biggest guns. They can send the emails and put you on blast and do it all. It does not matter because you know what? God is in me. And God is in them if they could only get over themselves to find him. And this is the truth for every person. And this is the promise of the Easter season. God is not out there somewhere. Christ is not on a cross 2,000 years ago. Christ is your very self. Picking up this body and dedicating yourself to his will every day. Not through tension and anxiety, not through upsets or trying to control the situation to be what you think it should be, but through relaxing and trusting and surrendering his will. It takes all your courage, and it takes all your humility, and it takes all your faith. But I tell you this, that if you do those things with sincerity, he will do it all. And you will be left thinking, it was only by his grace that I had any courage. It was only by his grace that I was brought to my knees. It was only by his grace that I said, God, I can do nothing, but I will do anything you would have me do. This is a wonderful thing because this is how we were in fact designed to live. This is the intelligence of God's creation in us. And it is the highest form of his creation if we would but use it. We don't need AI for the intelligence of this world. We don't need robots to do things for us. We only need to realize the technology we're looking for, the information and intelligence we're looking for, are inside of us. They are in our own life, and they are in the Christ that God has put in our life if we would just be open to receive Him and not reject Him like so many others. But we have to want that. And then when we want that, God will make it clear in the form of the Guru that this is your life now, that you are now Peter, that you are now Andrew, that you are now James, and you are John, and you are Mary Magdalene. That no matter what we've done or how we've come up short in the past, it matters not. Our eyes are on the prize. Our eyes are with God and Guru. We will not let go of the source. We will not let go of God's presence in our life and the living presence of Him now. This week, what will He have me do? This afternoon, what is your plan for me? It's fun. It's not grim at all. It's the most wonderful thing. We don't even have to know what we're going to get into. It's awesome. And it's awesome because it's His will. What else are we looking for? I opened up this Discourses book from 2017 last night, and I came upon this March 30th. What is today? March 29th. March 30th, 2017, and it's a picture of a rodeo. I'd like to share this with everybody. It's David's writing all of these things and more. The picture is the opening of the Houston Rodeo. This Bible quote from Matthew, "Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. Your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of these things. But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Matthew 6:31. It's a great theme for this day. The great Master in these and previous verses gives impeccable instructions for prayer, humility, and pronouncing as a fact that God knows what you need even before you articulate it. I have to say that my life has been a demonstration of this principle, as was Mother's. It has been 20 years now since God directed me to leave my profession and be His aspirant and minister only. Operating, in quotes, without a net, I set off without any idea of how I would have food, shelter, or clothing. Since that time, I have been provided with such abundance that it is beyond belief. 15 years ago, Carla joined me in this mutual quest. She had been the personal assistant to the third wealthiest individual in the world, with the highest pay she had ever received. Throwing her lot in with mine and God's, she brought with her a 6-year-old Ford Escort as a dowry. She has shared this life of service to God first with wild abandon. It is not a formula type thing. Simply leave your job and expect God to take care of you. Rather, it is living the attitude of seva, service to Him. It is living the attitude of service. And knowing that as you do, whether you are the owner of a company or an employee, He will look after all your needs. It takes a 100% participation for this law of God to be fully enacted. When you do, then God joyfully gets busy organizing every detail of your life for your and the world's highest good. When we have left on journeys, occasionally someone will say, "Have a good vacation." This always takes me by surprise, as I've never thought of needing or going on vacation. Boy, have I experienced that. He simply takes me to one place or another in order to fulfill some tasks He has assigned to me, as He is always working through me. Even though on the outside there may be a few signs of the tremendous labor he performs through this form, I am witness to what he does, and am cognizant of the price this form pays for the privilege of service to him. It has been his sweet will to burn with an inner fire each day in these three bodies, a purification rite of his choosing. Although few would necessarily notice, Carla is often highly attuned to the needs of this body, even before I am. Through her able assistance, I have been kept functioning, and she has kept this body in health, when otherwise it may have very well dispersed into the vaporized atoms from which it originated. Beyond keeping this body in operating condition, God also looks after everything needed, and seemingly more. It seems that many whims and ancient desires are also met by him by putting him first. In the last couple of years, Carla has mentioned on occasion she would like to see a rodeo. It has just been something that has been lurking in her mind, as neither she nor I have ever been to one. It had crossed my mind to one day go to a county fair and see a rodeo, but so far that had not materialized. Apparently, God was listening to her better than I, for he arranged to fulfill that desire in a masterful way. Upon arriving in Houston to see a long-term friend of Carla's, there was some mention of a rodeo. When Carla's friend's husband heard it was a wish of Carla's to see one, he made a call, and within hours it was arranged for us to all go to one of the biggest rodeos in the world, with all the top riders. Not only that, we were invited to a corporate suite with food and first-class seats, all included at no cost. Our dear hosts took us to the festivities in their luxury car, gave us a tour of the circus that was part of the fairgrounds, and we saw the blue ribbon animals winning their class. We were then escorted up to the suite. Carla was given a cowgirl hat. She wore a big smile throughout the day. It is clear that when God is present, then we may enjoy the world according to his will, knowing that if he is not in residence, then it all loses its value and meaning. But being keenly aware that this is his world, and that he manifests himself in all forms, then we may know him through his manifestations. Lose sight of him, and all is lost. Know him to be the best of this world, and we may glorify him through his manifold expressions. Carla had her whimsical wish satisfied through following, in every area, total surrender to him. In this way, we discover anew that in seeking his kingdom and righteousness first, God gives all these things and more to you as well. And there's a picture below printed in case it's difficult to read. These are the Texas Ten Commandments. First, just one God. Second, honor your ma and pa. Third, no telling tales or gossiping. Four, get yourself to Sunday meeting. Fifth, put nothing before God. Six, no fooling around with another fella's gal. Seven, no killing. Eight, watch your mouth. Nine, don't take what ain't yours. And 10, don't be a hankering for your buddy's stuff. I think that the closing thought that is there to be said is that when we go through this process that this Easter season represents of the crucifixion of this little self, it can feel heavy. And as we talk about this ideal of stepping fully into the Christ consciousness in our life, in our relationships, in ourself, that we have to simultaneously realize that as a soul, it's truly wonderful. And there is nothing greater to rejoice in and to have fun with. And so there's this great paradox of realities that the degree to which we still think of ourselves as this ego that is in truth dying a slow death sometimes, that we suffer more, and that the degree to which we are relating to life from this place of universal and loving service and seeing things for the truth and being a channel for love and the ways that are true for people in our lives, then it's all good now. And we grow into this now with grace and with some semblance of harmony and balance. But the degree to which we cling to the old and the old ways of being and the self-identities is the degree to which we will suffer, and I say that through my own experience of knowing this. And there's a time and a place for that, and we go through that as God ordains us to go through that. But we don't need to make that any more extreme or severe than it already is. In fact, we need to focus on God as happiness, in God as freedom. And every time in our life there's an oppositional force to that happiness and freedom, somebody who's trying to control instead of be free, or trying to be a downer instead of happy, that's our own inner prompting from God to be free and happy. That's exactly who that is, and once we see behind the mask, no matter how fast this person is moving and how sped up it all is, we have sympathy for them, and we know that our own solution is to just keep our freedom, keep our peace, be happy now, love God. And in doing these things, God is here now. We are born into that spirit now. And we live in this way, and we represent this for the world, even as the world may come to reject us. Not our problem. Freedom and happiness now. I'd like to ask Bhima if he has any song fit for the occasion. It'd be wonderful to share that with us now.
Nothing else would be true. give it all to you. I leave it up to you. I'll give it all to you.
Let's go ahead and send out ohms to one another and to all those in our lives. Ohms of God's peace and God's grace to be born in all these souls. Happy Sabbath, everyone. Palm Sunday. Setting up for a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice that we'll have this talk to be able to come back to this week.
Well, Carla, did the rodeo take you back?
It is. It's like thousands and thousands. It's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Texas, they do everything huge.
Yeah. Everything bigger in Texas. Yeah, you should see their pancakes.
They. we went to a quick story. Before we went into the rodeo, we walked around and they had the first place of cows and pigs and all the animals in this huge, I mean, the thing was huge, huge building. And we walked in, we were just kind of walking around. It was the last day, so there weren't a whole lot going on, but they had the first place cows. And they had built a little shed, just, you know, and it had a window. It's pretty small. And there were two cows, and there were the first and second place cows. And we were walking by, and I walked in, and it was a really small area. I mean, it's probably the size of this rug. It was straw, and they had, you know, a little fence. And I walked in, and there were two cows, and they were just sitting down on the straw. And one of the signs said that the first place cow was worth $350,000. And yeah, I don't know how that works, but so I walked in, I told David, I said, you got to go in and look at these two cows, you know, and especially in India where cows are so valued, and they're huge. So I walked out and there was a window where you could look in, because it wasn't just not much space, so I walked out to let him go in and see, and the two cows were like, you know, kind of facing each other like this, and then, you know, you kind of walked in. And as soon as David walked in that shed, that one cow stood up and stared at him. He was just looking right at David. And I was standing at the window watching. I was like, did anybody see this? Yeah, you know, because it's like, because you know, all these people have been walking in and out, and as soon as David walked in, that cow stood up and just stared at him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really something. And so, and then, like, you know, God's miracles and incredible things, we all just kind of walked out and just kind of kept on walking. The whole time just going.
Well, the cow had the eyes to see.
Really. I mean, it was quite something. But he stood up and just stared at David.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what I remember.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it is really fun and it's really sweet of them, but that's what I remember. That cow standing up.
So sweet of Ron to give you the full treatment.
I mean, really.
You have to wait. You couldn't make Big Abba before, but then it became the VIP room.
Yeah.
Really, just something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You never know where God's going to take you on these adventures. Really. You know, just exactly what you said. It's like so far beyond what you could possibly imagine for yourself. God. His will and surrender.
Well, I've been feeling the testing of, you know, of, like you mentioned, not getting sucked into somebody else's tornado, and so it's helpful again to have this talk to refer to again as mm-hmm. all these reminders mm-hmm. of how to respond to mm-hmm. Difficult energy and how to be able to let it go at the end of the day and to be really sincere in giving myself enough time to let those things and those possible attachments come up and release them mm-hmm. so I don't take them or bring them, you know, mm-hmm. along with me. Mm-hmm. I've definitely felt like I feel like I'm reaching a point where I'm being pushed out of the being able to relate to things as just a little person,
yeah.
feeling the pressure of it.
And yeah.
So I feel the grace of that, you
yeah.
know, because mm-hmm. it's like I wouldn't choose it of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, so that reminder of being, of relaxing and like being in the joy
mm-hmm.
As being the way to not, you know, to expand. And like when you said to be like an, in, remember us as an infinite consciousness. And
yeah,
and
every problem has the solution.
Yeah,
it's all infinite. Don't
yeah.
limit it to your own personhood.
Right, right.
And don't limit it to someone else's personhood either.
Yeah,
allow
yeah, yeah.
keep yourself to keep searching with God for what's actually happening inside of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
but when I was thinking about the alpacas, it like Hobbes flashed into my mind,
mm-hmm.
and like just like some of you, most of you know about Hobbes, but Hobbes was the angry alpaca. So it's like even the alpacas are very consistent in their temperament. They're, I always compare them to like deer. They're kind of like having deers for pets, so they're very skittish and they're like prey, but they're very curious and sweet, just like deer. But then I have met two alpacas that are the extremes, and they're not like that at all. One of them was Carly, who was the first one who passed away here and had the wound. And it was like hidden in her fiber and we didn't see it. And then I saw the flies and then it had already gone septic. And the vet was like, yeah, when if it's not treated immediately in an alpaca, they die. So, I mean, there's so much grace and hope situation and how the vet came the next morning.
Yeah.
There's so much grace.
Yeah.
But Carly was perfected as an alpaca. She was beyond an alpaca. And she loved children. And she would run up and lay down to be pet by them.
Wow.
It was, knowing all the other alpacas, it's hard to imagine an alpaca like that. But I have distinct memories where I would just go sit down and Carly would just sit right next to me and just lay there and let you just rub her. And that was her consciousness. She was so open and she wasn't afraid anymore. She wasn't like an alpaca that had that fear and survival instinct still at the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like that's why she left first, because she had just mastered.
Mm-hmm.
She was a master alpaca and didn't need to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And then there was Hobbes, and he was the other end of the spectrum. He wasn't a prey alpaca. He was angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean angry.
Yeah.
Like I was basically the only person who could go in with Hobbes
yeah.
and not have him jump on them or attack. And if people would go in, I was always paranoid, because if people would go in around him and they faced the other direction, Hobbes would charge them from behind and try to jump them.
Past it.
That he was so angry. And this, and you know, I felt like we kind of got taken by the alpaca guy, Steve. Like he got rid of him without really giving us full disclosure of like Hobbes' nature. I was just very naive. Like we knew we were supposed to get alpacas and we ended up. His brother Toulouse was like an angel, even bigger than Hobbes, and was just so sweet. He was like regal and so still and calm. But Hobbes was so angry, and he would line up at the fence and like spit and dig into the earth and like look at you with these crazy eyes trying to attack you. And so after a while, like I have been working with him for like a year, I would go in the barn and feed him cookies and pet him and like just get him to calm down, and he would actually like relax with me and we would be fine. But then like a week later, 2 weeks later, somebody else would come around and Hobbes would lose his mind again. This was going on for so long, and I just was praying like, this isn't okay. Actually, Linus was here, and that was like one of the final straws. Was Linus was in the alpaca yard. Linus is a young man from Hong Kong who's really short in stature, very sweet. And Hobbs jumped on him from behind. And I was like, this is just great. I ran Hobbs off. I was there. And I was like, God, what do I do? And I was completely at a point of, like, surrender. Like, I did not know what to do anymore. Because it was not, this was not okay. This was not okay for Hobbs to live here. Some people were like, sometimes you have to just kill an animal that is like this. And I was just like, God, there's got to be, I don't want to kill Hobbs myself. Like, that's not an option to me. But there's got to be a solution. And I just was praying about it and surrendering. Like, I just knew I didn't know what to do anymore. And it was like a burden I was carrying. Most people were not aware of this or thinking about it. It's like, to me, it was a very big deal. And I just remember suddenly the light bulb went off because I surrendered. And it was like, suddenly it was like I was not looking at it as Zach trying to figure out the problem. It was allowing God's intelligence to actually move through me. And it was not by me creating it. I wasn't in charge of figuring it out. It was like as soon as I let go of figuring it out, the answer became so clear, so fast, and so simply. Like, Hobbs is a guard alpaca. And, like, his strength is that he wants to attack things. Like, for us, that's a horrible thing. But maybe there's someone who wants an alpaca that attacks an attacka. And I put it on Craigslist. And the clarity that God gave me was to just do a posting that said, guard alpaca. It was like, what I didn't want to do and what I couldn't have any good feeling about was trying to rehome Hobbs without giving full disclosure. Which is what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do that to someone. I wanted to fix that pattern. And like, that was what I thought. In my mind, this is impossible. Who would take this alpaca that's angry and spitting on people and attacking people? Who would possibly take it? Like, nobody. Nobody would take him unless I give full disclosure and say that's exactly what he is. And that's exactly what I did. And I got an email right away. And somebody lived up in the hills and says, we're looking for a guard alpaca that could be like a llama for our other alpacas because we have mountain lions and we need something that's aggressive. And I was like, this is your guy. This is totally your guy. Like, this is, I got him. Like, he's here. The guy comes out here. The first thing he says is like, yeah, I just moved out here from St. Louis. I'm like, mother of wisdom, like, good for you. And I'm like, I'm from St. Louis. He's like, and he does the classic St. Louis thing. What high school did you go to? And I'm like, you buzzards, God, this is amazing. God is amazing. This is amazing. But there was still one more test. And I was like, Hobbs is out in the pasture. And he's like, down by where the pond is at. There wasn't the pond dug at that time. And like, this guy's not an alpaca expert either. He's just gotten into alpacas. And I'm, like, telling him, like, you have to understand, like, he will respect you, but you always have to face him. And you shouldn't send any kids or anyone in there who doesn't understand that. Like, you have to face him, just like Pesto. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I got it. Like, you have to understand, like, we have mountain lions. Like, mm-hmm. We're in a different place, and we want something aggressive. And I was like, nice. And then, so the final test is like, I have to go get Hobbs out of the pasture into the trailer. So I'm walking out there with a leash and with a, what's the hat? The thing that goes over the muzzle. I'm going to muzzle Hobbs. Like, but my God, yeah, right. I'm just like, God, if anything's going to happen, you're going to have to do it. And I walked out there just praying the whole way, knowing I can't of myself get Hobbs into this trailer. Hobbs is not... He's not willing to participate in that way. Like, it's going to be a fight. We're going to fight each other. And then I walked up to Hobbs and I just told him what we were doing and that there was a home for him and he had a job and it was just me and Hobbs. And there's a job for him and I need him to go do the job. And Hobbs always respected me and I could feel him processing it. I put the muzzle on him. He didn't resist it. And we walked peacefully up to the trailer. He walked right in the trailer. I took the muzzle off and shut the door. And that was the end of the Hobbs chapter. But and all of it, for me, it was the miracle was God. You know, it had nothing to do with me. And this is what we have to understand about the path, is that it's not us. It's not us figuring it out. It's not us being the doer. It's us getting out of the way and letting God do it. So... Anyways, the alpaca stuff brought me back to Hobbs, and I have there's a lot of alpaca history that'll be fun to share.
Yeah.
What do you think? Guess what's in here?
What's in there?
Yeah.
This is a great story.
Guess what's in here?
A drawing?